I find it's interesting. I go to church on Sunday, and I've spoken here a couple times on Wednesday night. I find it really interesting because when I go to church on Sunday, it seems like every time whoever is speaking on Sunday is speaking on the topic that I'm starting to work on for Wednesday night. And I'm thinking, is this my sign that I need to come up with a new topic, or is it a sign that maybe this is kind of where we're at right now and what we need to hear? And not this Sunday, but the week before, Rita talked on the whole idea of integrating self and how do we embrace ourselves and kind of integrate these parts of ourselves that we've kind of disowned and rejected. And she used some really cool metaphors. She used the idea of the beach ball. I don't know if you were there that Sunday, but she used that metaphor of the beach ball. Some heads going up and down of how hard it is to try to keep that piece underwater. You kind of keep it down, the energy it takes to keep that piece down. And inevitably, what happens? It slips out, pops up, and hits you in the face, or water splashes, and we see kids giggling about that. And it's kind of a fun thing to do, except in our real lives, when we're really trying to do that with a piece of ourselves that we really don't like, and we don't want people to see, it's like it's not a fun game like we have in the pool. It's really serious business. We want to keep that piece down. We want to keep it below water. I don't want anybody to know that I've got this characteristic. I don't want anybody to know I've got this problem. I don't want anybody to know I've got this bad habit. So all of us are kind of in this huge pool of life, all of us having these beach balls we don't want anybody to know that we have. And we're just kind of walking around life with our head above water. And all of us are doing this. And it's kind of like, and once in a while something pops up, and we kind of look over at that person and look what they popped up. And the whole time we're holding our little beach ball down, hoping that our beach ball doesn't pop up and everybody's going to talk about us, because we know that if people see that side of ourselves, that we're going to be rejected and shamed and thrown out, and oh my God, we're going to die. We'll be annihilated if you know that part about me. And so that was kind of an example that Rita gave, and it's like this just hits directly on a text that I was thinking about sharing tonight. And it's a text in Luke. And it's kind of fun when we kind of interact different disciplines. And I'm a psychologist, as Millie said, and so now I kind of look at things through psychological eyes. And there's a text in Luke 15 that probably many of us are familiar with. And it's about a rich man that was going to throw this banquet. And he invited his affluent friends, and he sent his servant out to go ahead and say, it's time for the banquet, come on in. And as the story goes, one of the guests said, oh, you know what, I'd love to come, but I can't make it. Just bought some land, got to go check it out, can't make it, sorry. So the servant goes to the other guest that was invited. You know what, I just bought some oxen, just bought this herd of oxen, and of standing moose, and can't come. And so the servant then goes to another guest and says, you know what, just got married, can't come. So the servant dutifully goes back to the master and says, you know, master, all of your affluent guests that you invited, they can't come. And the master gets enraged and says, you know what, we have this feast prepared. I want you to go out into the highways and the byways and invite the crippled, invite the maimed, invite the lame, invite the blind, invite the... And basically, it's all these poor people. Bring them in. Bring them in. And so the slave goes out there and brings them in, and there's still room. And so the servant goes out and just brings all of the homeless, the vagrants, and fills the feast and have a wonderful time. Well, the way that I kind of grew up learning about the story, I just kind of thought this was kind of a nice lesson about charity. Let's bring in these people, and just let's not give our gifts to the wealthy that can reciprocate, but let's give them to the people that can't reciprocate. But as I started reading this text a little more closely, I saw this is really about in the context. If you look at the stories beforehand and the stories after, it's really in the context of healing, about integration. It's about bringing the unacceptable in. The next story talks about the lost sheep. Let's bring something lost, something that's been outcast, and bring it back home. And so if we look at the story through this way, and we also recognize a bit of the culture, that it wasn't so much a focus on the poor, but it was the focus on, we have a rich person, we have a king, we've got this ruler, so what do we want in his environment? Who are we going to sit at the dinner table with him but the perfect of society? The people who come with their coats and ties, the people who come with their nails just right and their dresses. These are the people that we want sitting at the table with the rich king. We want perfect people sitting there. And the story takes a twist. No, with this king, what we want are the imperfect. We want those people that are kind of pushed underneath the surface of society. The unacceptables, the ones that have shame issues, the ones that have handicaps, the ones that aren't quite good enough to sit in the front rows. And so now we look at the story in Luke with new insights, that this master, this king, this ruler is inviting those parts of us to come to his kingdom, to come to his table, to come to his house. Not the perfect parts, but you know what? I want all you guys to let go of your beach balls, bring them in your hands, and let's just sit down and have a good time at the beach. Let's forget about hiding the beach balls. All those parts of you that you want to hide, all those pieces of you that society says are unacceptable, bring them in. At this dinner, I want to have a full table. Not just a full table with each chair being full, but a full table that everybody in each chair is there fully, fully present. Not just the part of you that you think you want me to see, but I want the people at my table fully there. So we start looking at this story that Luke tells as far as an invitation, not necessarily of just the poor and the needy, but the invitation for each of us to be fully present in his presence. And what is that like? What is that like to be fully present? And for some reason, when we start thinking about ourselves, we say, but, you know, can I really, really risk being fully there? Can I really, really, really risk showing you everything? I have a hard time with that. You know, here we're talking about it pretty openly, but if you were to ask me to kind of open up my skeleton closet, I ain't going to do it. It's too scary. It's too scary because I have too much of a need to be approved of. I have too much of a need to be accepted. I have too much of a need to look in your eyes and to see in your eyes that you like what you're seeing back. And I don't really trust if I really show you that you're going to like what you're seeing back. And it really goes back to a very core level of survival. I really need to feel fully connected and attached to you for my own survival. And this is something that goes back before any of us really started forming verbal cognitive memories. We think when the baby is first born, his first sense of himself as an individual comes from the sense of loss, of separation. When he's still in the womb, when she's still in the womb, there's a sense of oneness. The umbilical cord being fed, there's very much a connection between baby and mommy. There's no really sense between I'm baby and that's mommy and mommy's feeding me. It is literally physically one organism. The umbilical cord is combining them. And so there is one being. So the very sense, the very first sense that the baby has that he is or she is a separate being comes from the severing of the umbilical cord or a wound. Our first sense of self comes from a wound. And so now we start organizing ourselves in life around a wound. I'm separate. Yikes. What does the baby do when he comes into the world and feels the cold environment? He protests. He cries. The first sense of being welcome into the world comes from a wound. Comes from, I want this oneness. I need that oneness for survival. And literally, the baby needs to keep that connection with mother to survive physically. Once the umbilical cord is severed, then he needs the breast. She needs to have that nourishment back and forth between the mother and baby. So physically, we see that if the baby was just thrown off to the side after birth, it would physically die. But what happens emotionally? Does the baby need emotionally the same sort of connection as he needs physically? Yeah. Physically, just like the baby needs the milk to survive, the baby also needs the physical attachment to survive. A lot of studies done, even before studies were empirically done, back in the 13th century, Frederick II, he was a Holy Roman Emperor, he wanted to kind of set out and understand what the basic inborn language of a child was. And so he took this group of children and kind of put them off to the side without really teaching them the language to see what would develop. So back in the 13th century, this group of children, this group of babies that weren't really taught or nourished, and it was just to see who are they without human influence? What language will they learn? Well, back in the 13th century, this group of children, even though their physical needs were met, without the emotional attachment, you can imagine what happened to them. They died. They died. Even though the physical attachment was there, the physical nourishment was there, all those needs were met, without that emotional connection, these children died. More recently, in the 1940s, Renee Spitz took these children. They were institutionalized. They were orphans. And for good reason, because they weren't quite sure what was happening as far as some of the infectious germs going on. And so they would take these children in orphanages, and they would keep them in sterile environments. And again, their nourishment would be given, the food would be given, they'd be kept warm. But yet, the instructions were given not to touch these children because there could be germs. So for good reason, the children were not touched. But without touch, these children died. So just where we see there's such a physical need for attachment, if the umbilical cord's cut, if the baby isn't given food, he's going to die. If he's not given the emotional nourishment, he's going to die. We see more recently a gentleman by the name of Harry Harlow, did some research with monkeys and gave them surrogate parents. The little baby monkeys had surrogate parents. And one of the surrogate parents was a wire monkey with the food, and the other surrogate monkey had no food but had terry cloth wrapped around it. And so the monkeys learned very easily. They knew where to go to food, but when they wanted to be comforted, they would go to the terry cloth monkey with no food. So given a choice, the monkey would choose emotional nourishment over physical nourishment. So here we have a group of us knowing we need attachment, knowing I need your approval, knowing I need to see something positively reflected back to me, or I will die, I will disintegrate, and I don't believe if you really see me, if you really know me, I'll get that. So it's not just an ego issue that I want you to think well of me. It's a survival issue. For my own survival, I need to be thought well of. For my own survival, I need you to like me. For my own survival, I need you to accept me. So I'm certainly not going to risk showing you those parts of me that might be rejected. And so we hear the story in Luke about a master who says, you know what? I want you at my table. I want the table full. But not only do I want the table full, I want the very chair that you're sitting in to be completely full. To be completely full of everything you are, every experience you've ever had, every dream you have, every pain you have, every piece that is in you, I want at my table. And then my table will be full. And so we have another messenger writing something very similar in the 13th century, and I gave you a poem. It says The Guest House. And it's this idea of welcoming life. Welcoming, how do we go in and we welcome ourselves? Now it's interesting, this is in the 13th century, and it was written really pretty much, it was in Turkey, kind of a similar area that Luke wrote from. And by now, this was an area where there was a lot of trade, and it was a blend between Muslims, Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, so very much a cross-section of society. And this poet, this prophet, this the philosopher by the name of Rumi, did a lot of writing, a lot of love poetry, and a lot of just kind of talking about the human experience. And he wrote something very simple and something very similar about this need to approach life as a welcoming experience. And as we read through here, pay attention to your reactions, because we're going to be talking about welcoming not just the fun things of life, but those things that often we would want to reject. And we're saying, ain't no way I'm letting that in my house. Mm-mm, no way. So let's read through here to the poem that Rumi wrote, The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Eric, did you get one of these, Millie? Is there one more of these I can grab real quick? Is there one? Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
All right. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. Again, these are the things we're welcoming. A joy, a depression, a meanness. So momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So picture yourself in this house, your life, a guest house. And at the door comes despair, comes sorrow. And you're thinking, here this is at the door, am I going to let it in? Uh-uh. But yet Rumi and Luke both are talking about, no, these are a part of the full human experience, and how do we make room for them? But yet, not only am I afraid that you're going to reject part of me, I end up rejecting part of me. It's like, no, I don't like that. I don't want that depressive experience. No, I'm going to dig that out. I want to pull that out. I don't want that. And so we start looking at parts of ourselves that we're very uncomfortable with, parts we don't like, parts we look in the mirror and we want to cut out. So not only as it becomes an experience that I'm trying to impress you, I'm starting to reject myself. And so how do we welcome these things? When we look at these things we classify, we understand, we experience as negative, we experience them as negative because we have a memory, we have a history, we have an experience of these things very much being negative. You think of the idea of fire. In the last year, San Diego really has had some very profound experiences with fire, and largest evacuation of history we see here in our county. And so we see huge loss. And so you talk to somebody that went through a major loss of fire, to where maybe they lost their house, maybe even they lost, heaven forbid, a loved one in the fire, all of their possessions. Maybe they had some bodily wounds with the fire. Their whole life has been devastated with fire. And so if they're standing in their life now at the guest, in the guest house, and fire is knocking on the door and let me in, and the person says, oh, there's no way I want the negative experience of fire in, I want to ask you, is fire good? Or is fire bad? It's both. It's based on our experience of it. It's based on our perspective of it. It's based on how we organize that into our life. If I take the experience of fire, because my history, my experience of fire has been something that has been very devastating, and I don't allow fire in my life, will I ever have the experience of a campfire or s'mores or warm stew in my house or a warm fire or even my car engine firing from fire? No. Because I've classified fire as being something very negative. Because of my experience of fire, I don't want it. And so if I completely take these things in my life which I experience and organize around my brain as being negative, I don't want those in my life, all of a sudden I'm living half of a life. What would it be like to live life without fire in my life? Would I know what a warm shower is? No. No. All because I'm protecting myself from a wound that I had from fire. And again, remember, most of us, our first sense of self comes from a wound. And so if we go back and look at the seriousness of that, pretty much all of our life now is protecting myself from wound. I'm not going to let you in. I'm not going to let you close. It's too scary. Ain't going to do it. But if we start having new experiences around those wounds, all of a sudden we can open up and say, oh, you know what? Yeah. Fire burning down a house? Bad. Fire warming my fireplace? Good. It's one thing to cognitively talk to a person about saying, hey, let's work through this. But it's another person, it's another experience to sit down with a person and say, hey, come sit with me by the fireplace and let's enjoy the warm, comfortable fire together. Change takes place through experience. Again, our first experience of self was through a wound, a yes and then, a me and you, a judgment. Good, bad. If you really see me, will I be accepted? reorganizing my thoughts around what is it really like to risk being with you, to risk being seen. And you know what? Find out I can survive this. What's it like to be fully welcomed in another person's presence? It's one thing to read about it and talk about it, but it's another thing to experience it. We're going to stretch our comfort zone just a little bit tonight, okay? I know that we're pretty much out of time here, just a couple more minutes. But what I want to do, and I want you guys to kind of work with me just for a second on this, it might be uncomfortable for some of you, and it might be kind of fun for some of you. I want you to be able to look in another person's eyes, and as you look in their eyes, to not experience judgment, but experience a welcoming. And as you look in their eyes, I want you to think in your head, I want to welcome this person. No words, no vocabulary, no explanation. Just as you make eye contact with a person, I want you, the only thought you have is welcome. 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 And so what I'm going to do, what we're going to ask you to do now, like I said, stretch your comfort zone. I want everybody to stand up and find a partner. Okay? We're going to stretch it. Stand up and find a partner. You might have to move to another pew. You might find somebody that, preferably, that you may not even know. Millie needs a partner here. All right. Find a partner. Once you find a partner, the only thought, no words, the only thought I want you to have in your head is welcome. And I want you just to gaze into the other person's eyes and be aware of what your body feels like. You might want to look away. You might be shy. Invite yourself both to be welcomed and through your eyes, just welcome the other person. And this might seem like eternity. We're only going to do it for about a minute. But that's the only thought I want you to have is welcome and be aware of the experience. So please, no talking. And make sure you breathe. And just give yourself a little inventory of how you're feeling. Thank the other person. And have a seat. Change doesn't happen by trying to keep that ball underwater. That intensifies the problem. It happens through new experiences, finding out that you can take your beach ball and play with it with another person. You can use it to play catch. It comes through these new experiences of really risking and being welcomed. And sometimes we don't understand it. I know that when I come to one of Millie's classes in the middle of the week and we have these spirit circles, I don't understand what's going on. But there's something about feeling seen and being a part of something, having a new experience that starts to feed me. Growth comes from opening ourselves up to new experiences and allowing that to nourish us. Let's look at this last poem to end with tonight. It's from Mark Nepo. It's called Look Around. If you try to comprehend air before breathing it, you will die. If you try to understand love before being held, you will never feel compassion. If you insist on bringing God to others before opening your very small window of life, you will never have honest friends. If you try to teach before you learn or leave before you stay, you will lose your ability to try. No matter what anyone promises, to never feel compassion, to never have honest friends, to lose your ability to try, these are desperate ways to die. A dog loves the world through its nose. A fish through its gills. A bat through its sense of blindness. An eagle through its glide. And a human life through its spirit.